Hey there, this is Tim Gabriel, and you are listening to the Stargirl After Show.
This is the Stargirl After Show with Sarah and Sean. Your post-show breakdown of DC Stargirl with Easter eggs, exclusive behind-the-scenes info, and cast and crew interviews.
This is our destiny.
I finally know who I really am.
I'm Stargirl.
This is the Stargirl After Show.
Hey, Star fam, welcome back to another episode of Stargirl After Show, sponsored, as always, by Stargirl.tv and DCTV.news, your best resources for news, media, and spoilers about Stargirl and other DC Comics properties. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week, we're talking, of course, about Infinity Inc. Part 2, which is Chapter 8 of Frenemies. This episode was written by Paula Sevenbergen and Robbie Hine, and directed, just like the last one, by Glenn Winter, who I'll say no more about because I said all the things last episode. Actually, I didn't say all the things. I forgot to mention that he's a great veteran of superhero television, having directed on Smallville and I think all the Arrowverse shows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a big time superhero TV director. And just a great visionary guy because he helped set up the whole look and feel of Stargirl.
I assume since it was a part one and two that James Robinson was going to write both of them.
That is not how the writer's room works, I guess.
Okay.
But Glenn Winter directed both of these because they were shot at the same time.
Makes sense.
And that's happening more and more in TV, I've noticed. I can't even remember the last time I was on a show that didn't shoot two episodes at a time. But Stargirl season 2, I think, was the first one I worked on that did that.
Now, when you say two episodes at a time, do you mean they finished filming one and then immediately filmed the other one? Or are they filming scenes from two episodes? Like, they could possibly do that on one day?
Yes, that one.
Gotcha. Ooh, that has a lot to keep straight.
It actually works out really well with these two episodes, since it's a two-parter at, like, all the same locations.
Yeah.
Like Helix, for example. But yeah, typically they'll just try to keep mostly the same locations in those two episodes if they know they're going to shoot that way, or mostly the same locations between the two episodes is what I mean. So that you can film all your stuff from episode A and episode B at the one location all at once over a day or two or three or whatever, and then move on to your next location.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's all about saving money.
Yeah.
Doing things more efficiently.
I feel like as a director, that would be hard to keep track of. Okay, this is what it needs to be for this episode and all that.
Well, the assistant director's team makes the shooting schedules, and there's a document called a one-liner, which keeps track of the shooting schedule. And so it has all the scenes that you're shooting for a day broken out, which one it is, which episode it's in. And it's called a one-liner because every scene is broken down into one descriptive line of text. For example, this first scene, the one-liner might say, "Pat in the shade, wake up in the Shadowlands." So you can look and you go, okay, that's what happens there. And typically, like, if you've read the script, you can look at that one line and it tells you everything you need to know what scene you're working on.
See, if I was writing that line, I would say that Pat in the shade are starting the most amazing buddy adventure ever. Because that's what they're doing. Starting right here, already playing off each other, doing really well.
Well, let's get into it. I mean, I gave us this awesome segue.
It was perfect.
You know what I noticed on this viewing is I think this is Hat's version of the Shadowlands, maybe? Because all the classic cars everywhere.
Well, wasn't that kind of how it was when Courtney was in it?
I don't remember there being so many classic cars or cars. There might have been like a car or two driving by, but I just noticed a lot of classic cars here.
Yeah, for sure.
Though the Shade is an antiques dealer and a very, very old dude.
It's true.
So it could be the Shadowlands for both of them. But, you know, old cars specifically are Pat's thing. And the Shade's thing, because he drives that classic car in the last season.
Mm-hmm.
I keep arguing with myself and I think that it's just, never mind.
That's why they would do so great in a buddy movie, because they're so similar and yet so different.
Yeah.
I mean, we start off right off the bat where Pat's like, are we in the Shadowlands? And Shade is like, yes. Like, duh.
Well, what about, like, we got to figure out how to get out of here. Oh, do we now? Do we?
Brilliant idea.
See, look, the Stargirl verse is going to be very easy to start if we want to do this. There are so many spinoffs that we can do.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about that later. But at this point, you know, they're going to try to get out. They're going to go to the movie theater because I guess that's the most sensible place for a gateway between worlds, question mark.
I don't know why, but I know that's where it was when Courtney came back.
That's where it was in the real world when Courtney came back.
Yeah.
Because that's where the Shade happened to be.
Yeah.
Courtney, though, was in the JSA garage and then came through the movie theater. I mean, if we're going to call it back and give some familiarity to the audience, that obviously makes sense. Just in terms of the world, doesn't seem like it much matters. And in fact, when he couldn't get in, the Shade said, fine, I'll do it here.
And so he tries doing it there, does the whole shadow thing, but that turns green. And he says that they are trapped in the Shadowlands until Jenny's ring is free from corruption.
It must be really unsettling to see a bright flash of green in a black and white world.
Oh, yeah. I love Shade going, you know, until then, I'm just as useless as you are, Pat.
So much to talk about in this next scene, because we've talked about the Helix Institute, but the Helix Institute is a reference to the supervillain team from Infinity Inc. known as Helix. And the characters in Helix are as follows. Well, one of them is Mr. Bones. And then you have Carcharo, who's like a big monster thing. You've got Penny Dreadful, Critter, and the character with the funniest name, Dow Jones, which I don't know why I never noticed that before. I guess I never like had to pronounce it in my head. But then I realized that T-A-O is pronounced Dow, and her name is straight up Dow Jones, like the stock exchange.
When I was trying to Google to look up these characters, it was bringing up stock exchange stuff. And I was like, wait, that's not how what I spelled. And then that's when it clicked for me. Yeah. Oh, Dow Jones.
Now, Critter is not a dog in the comics. Critter is a big hairy beast. Well, a small hairy beast, but a hairy beast with claws and stuff, you know. I even saw someone on Twitter predict that Critter was the one that killed the gambler.
Oh,
because we
that would be interesting.
We set up Mr. Bones last season. We knew Helix was there. And hey, random Twitter person, not Twitter. It was Reddit. Someone in that Reddit Stargirl TV subreddit thought it was Critter. So to you, random person, congrats on your deep Infinity Inc. knowledge. And I really, really loved that theory. But now that we see that Critter is a dog, I can say, nah. Critter didn't kill the gambler. But I loved that theory.
That's a pretty good one.
I see these theories all over, and it's so tempting to pop in and say, like, oh man, that's a really good one. Not true, but I don't say anything. I have to bite my tongue. Cause, you know, telling someone they're wrong could lead to, you know, them figuring out stuff.
Well, yeah, and then what are you gonna do if someone guesses right? Because you can't just lie to them and say that they're wrong.
Well, he comes in on every post and says that they're wrong, and he didn't post on mine, so I must be right.
Exactly.
Yeah, can't do that. I'm not worried about that, though, because y'all are never going to figure it out. So anyway, we see all these characters at Helix. A couple of them get dialogue. Dow gets dialogue, and Penny Dreadful gets dialogue. You notice Penny Dreadful's room was made of all mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to talk about the power suppressing rooms later.
Okay.
Because I have comments.
All right.
But yeah, Helix is in lockdown because of Jenny getting to Todd and unleashing shadow beasts or whatever. Shadow Todd. Obsidian. Unleashing Obsidian.
Okay. I just called him Shadow Todd in my notes.
I mean, we can call him Obsidian. That's... We've been calling Jenny Jade for, you know, a year.
It's true.
She's never referred to as Jade on the show.
Yeah.
But we know she's Jade.
All right, so we got Obsidian there, and Courtney is able to help him get back into his human form by helping him focus on his family and thinking about who he loves, because that's how she was able to get the darkness out of her with Eclipso. But then once he is in human form, he sees a blonde man who figure out that was his foster parent, says that Todd is sick for liking boys and no wonder his dad didn't want him, you know, and I wanted normal kids. I'm going to beat the sins out of you.
Yeah. You know, the more parents we see, the more I appreciate the Crocs.
I was going to say, you know, Barb.
Also Barb. Yes. And Pat, you know, we have our good parenting examples, but you know, for murderers, the Crocs are still better parents than most of the parents on the show.
It's true.
And, you know, Joy has disagreed with me on that, but I disagree with Joy. Parents should be more like the Crocs, question mark?
I'm not going to say that. Aim for Pat and Barbara.
The Crocs have done that, too.
This is true. Jenny kind of reaches out. It doesn't look like she's, like, trying to attack that guy, but she kind of reaches through him. And she touches Todd, and then there's another big green glow, and we see Courtney is waking up on the couch in Nurse Love's locked office.
Yeah, it's almost like there's some sort of feedback when Jenny and Todd come in contact.
Yeah.
Some sort of like a magnetic positive to positive kind of thing. Something
yeah.
like matter and antimatter. The light and the dark.
Exactly.
So yes. Moving forward to what you were saying about Courtney waking up in Nurse Love's office.
Trying to find a way out, and then she doesn't have her phone with her. So she finds a rotary phone, and we didn't get a chance to see if she would figure out how to use that because Nurse Love came in.
So it wasn't working, and I would just love for her to just be staring at it and have no idea how to make it function.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's probably realistic.
Yeah.
So Nurse Love comes in and we find out that she knows that Courtney is Stargirl.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to know about like the historical figure of Alan Scott being Green Lantern. And she's met Courtney before, but only as Courtney.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean that she knows that Courtney is Stargirl?
So I was assuming it meant they were the ones watching.
I think maybe we were meant to think that.
I think so, because it was the exact same screens and whatever security program. Because they looked the same last episode when they're watching Todd when they're doing the light thing. It had the same like writing up in the top corner description and all that.
I didn't even pick up on that. But I mean, obviously, you know, jumping forward a bit because we've seen the episode, we know that it's not them.
Yeah.
But they do seem to know a lot of stuff about a lot of stuff.
They do. And right now they're saying that everyone is in danger right now because Todd can swallow the whole world in the shadows if we don't get him under control. And Courtney says that she's not going anywhere because Todd sent her dad, meaning Pat, and the Shade into the Shadowlands. And I was like, is that the first time she called him dad? I think it is.
No.
Did she, when his mind was all being taken over in the first season?
Well, she called herself his daughter.
Okay.
I count that as the same thing, right?
I think it's different.
Maybe it is the first time. I don't know. She gave him the world's greatest dad mug.
It's true.
If that's not calling someone dad, I don't know what is. But here's something. They seem to know a lot about a lot of things. She didn't seem to know anything about the Shadowlands.
Yeah. So I was wondering if that was her playing them or if she actually didn't know about that.
She looked surprised to me.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Okay.
And she also seemed pretty surprised that Courtney had been to that place. So I wonder if she had thought until this moment of Courtney as like some little girl playing superhero with her toy staff and is now in this moment realizing like, oh, this girl's actually been through some stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe starts to take her a little more seriously here.
Then we cut over to the Shadowlands and there's little green flashes everywhere. And Shade's like, well, that's not normal. And Pat's like, well, we're in the Shadowlands. What's normal? And he's like, okay, well, these are the rules of the Shadowlands. You know, number one, it's going to prey upon your subconscious, your fears, your regrets. You cannot give in or you're going to jeopardize both of us. I like how the Shade is like so close to being like a good friend. And then he's like, don't do that because it's going to hurt me.
Yeah. Say what you will for the Shade, but he can always be counted on to look out for number one.
Mm-hmm. And then his next rule is that the doorways will take you where you most want to go, but it never really goes the right way. And he opens up a door and goes into Richie's diner. And he's like, well, this is weird. This place is insignificant.
Which I disagree with.
I do too.
Because he gets a stellar cup of tea there.
Yeah.
That, if for no other reason, is enough for, like, come on. What does the Shade want more than anything else in this moment? Probably a good cup of tea.
Oh, I'm sure.
So that's why he turns up in Richie's. He's looking for that cup of tea. But what's he get? He gets some gambler instead.
He does.
So the gambler is trying to make the Shade feel guilty for not forgiving him. And then bringing up the death of his sister, Emily, who you may recall when he was sick last season, he mistook her for, or mistook Barbara for Emily in his delirium.
Yeah, and that's why he kind of had a soft spot for Barbara, is because she reminded him of her.
And because she's Amy Smart, and everybody has a soft spot for Amy Smart.
It's true. The Shade isn't going to stick around to hear any more of the gamblers talking, so runs out with Pat, and they go to the pit stop, which he points out, oh, we're going from one grease pit to another. There's someone working on the car there.
And it's Pat's dad.
Yeah.
Who you may recall back in the first episode of the show in season one, Pat mentioned that his dad used to work on like fixing military tanks, you know, as opposed to civilian tanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he repaired tanks. So he traveled around with his dad a lot and even got to sit in one.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah, it helps me remember the fact that I had to Photoshop a dude with a tank.
Oh, yeah.
For Pat's trunk. I don't think we ever saw that photo, but I made it. It exists.
Okay.
Pat's dad with a tank. Yeah, I can be counted on for giving you the callbacks to stuff.
Yeah, for sure. All right, and then we go over to Jenny and Todd again, getting that same flashback for their separation. And then Jenny wakes up in a room that has goo all over the walls.
All right. Now, this is, I think you call it a synthetic polymer or an energy absorbing polymer or something.
Mm-hmm.
Meant to neutralize her powers for her own safety, quote unquote. But honestly, if we were going like pure comic accuracy here, they could have just put her in a wood paneled room because Alan Scott's ring didn't work on wood.
Oh.
Whereas the modern Green Lanterns, it was yellow. And even right. that's not accurate anymore.
Yeah.
Golden Age Green Lantern didn't work on wood.
Interesting.
So like Jenny in the hallway for Helix, absolutely powerless.
Oh, that would have been really funny. That would have been a great call. But I think it would have been too distracting. Like this goo fit much better, but
they never brought it up before.
Yeah.
You know, if in episode 3 of season 1 in the JSA headquarters, Pat was like, that's one of the most powerful things unless something is made of wood. You know, if they had brought it up before, but explaining it in this moment would have just been too much.
I agree.
And also, the wood weakness is kind of silly.
Is it sillier than yellow?
You know, honestly, when Jeff brought Hal Jordan back to life
before Jeff
and created the whole parallax thing, the yellow made a lot of sense. Like, Jeff made the yellow make sense. But both weaknesses are pretty silly. Yes. In their original forms. I mean, look, Hal Jordan had a bad guy who just was painted yellow, and that was like his thing.
Yep.
Just like a gold bad guy. What are you going to do to me, buddy? Huh? Nothing. That's what? Nothing.
Comics are so ridiculous.
So that's what I wanted to say about that. And you know what? While we're detouring a little bit, let's talk about Helix's wooden hallway or wood paneled hallway, because they actually borrowed the set from Doom Patrol for the interior Helix scenes in this episode and the previous episode.
Oh, really?
Which is funny because the exterior of the Doom Patrol mansion is right next door to where they shot Helix exterior. But both of those places, the interior of Helix and the interior of the Doom Patrol mansion, same interior, on stages like in a different town.
Really?
Yeah, over in Covington. So it's really weird that the exteriors are like right next to each other. It's like one driveway and then the very next driveway is the mansion.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, they went out and they used the hallways from the Doom Patrol set. I don't even know if they did anything to change them. I think they're just as they are, maybe lighted differently.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time there's been some set sharing on Doom Patrol in season 2, I believe. Cyborg goes to Detroit for a bit.
Uh-huh.
All the exterior Detroit scenes are on the Freeland back lot from Black Lightning.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was watching it and I was like, I recognize that. And I didn't recognize it from the show. I recognized it from being there when I filled in on that show. And I went through my photos and I was like, yep, that's it.
So how do shows decide, from what I've seen, it's like the two main places are filming in Atlanta and then filming up in Canada.
I don't know how they choose between the two, but they both have like really killer tax incentives.
Yeah.
So here in Georgia, I think it's like a 30% tax credit.
Oh, wow.
Up to 30%. Because there's like different things you can do to earn your tax credit. So when you see that made in Georgia in the end credits, that like adds 5 or 10% to your tax credit.
Oh, okay.
And then the main goal of the whole tax credit is that productions have to spend a certain percentage of their money in state to bolster the local economy.
That makes sense.
So, for example, if the props department needs to buy an awesome sword for Janitor Justin and they buy it on Amazon, they need to like submit paperwork showing that they like really, really tried to find that sword locally and couldn't. And that's why they got it from Amazon.
Okay, gotcha.
That's for the Georgia tax program. I can't speak to the Canadian tax programs. And I definitely can't speak to why they would have people film in a place that is basically ice half the year when beautiful Atlanta, Georgia is right here.
Well, and I thought it was strange because Nancy Drew films up in Canada and then within the same Drew universe is Tom Swift, but they did Atlanta. Although one of the creators said that that was because it is a much more diverse like crew down in Atlanta and they wanted their show to represent the real world, both on screen and off. And so that's why they chose to. But it was just very strange that they didn't keep them together.
Yeah, DC's really half and half, basically. Titans is up there. Flash is up there. I don't know where Superman and Lois is. I don't know if they're in Canada or LA or where. But, you know, Stargirl, Black Lightning, not anymore, obviously, but Stargirl, Black Lightning, Doom Patrol, all here. And, you know, the Suicide Squad shot here.
Yeah.
All the Marvel movies shoot here. Well, most. And most of the Marvel Disney Plus shows. The bar in She-Hulk in the first episode. It's right down the road. I can walk there in 3 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, we were talking about an episode, weren't we? Jenny wakes up in her cell that is not made of wood.
Yes. So Jenny tries to use her ring to get out and can't because of that goo. And here's the voiceover that the room is designed for her protection and they want the best for her and Todd, but the two of them can never be together again.
Also, Mr. Bones talking to her through that intercom was very considerate of him because it saved the show a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
His face is expensive, I'm sure.
Oh, it's got to be.
So,
but they've been saving by not having Stripe, not having Grundy, not even having the Star people fly around too much.
Yeah, and the Thunderbolt's been just sparks most of the time. But I can say one thing about Stargirl based on last season. When you go a lot of the season without VFX, it's because they want to give you something big later on.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Stripe was broken like all last season, so we could have a Stripe and Eclipso SmackDown. And then a Grundy and Eclipso SmackDown.
And I was here for it.
So, you know, keep your fingers crossed that that's the same thing this season.
Then we go over to the pit stop. Still in the Shadowlands. Pat's dad is just blaming him for pushing his mom and his dad apart from each other, saying it's all your fault. I was never proud to call you my son. And the Shade is saying, no, it's okay. This is the Shadowlands. This is the nightmare version. And Pat's like, nope, he said every word of this.
Here's my notes. We discussed last episode how my notes are so succinct. I wrote, Pat's dad is a Montez or worse.
Oh, yep. That works too.
Yeah. Though I think this line of dialogue from Pat may be one of the very most Pat things he's ever said. After all that verbal abuse, Pat's retort to what he knows isn't his real father is, still miss you, Pop.
Yep.
And then, you know, later on, not to get ahead of ourselves, but he says straight up, like, I never hated my dad.
Yeah.
And I love that while Pat works so hard to be a good father, it's not out of like a resentment for how he was raised. Like, that is how he was raised, but like, he still just always loved his dad.
Yeah.
That's just way nicer than I have within me to be. But I think that's just so Pat. Like, he is good down to his marrow.
It also explained how he was able to be Sylvester's sidekick. Sylvester did not treat him all that great all the time, but he loved him all the same.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think of that, is Sylvester was such a jerk to him all the time. He's like, oh, this is what love feels like.
It's very sad.
Yes, that's actually incredibly heartbreaking.
It is, but he has a family who loves him now. So they leave the pit stop. The doorway's green and they go and there is someone sick on the bed. And Shade immediately tries to leave, but the doorknob is green and will not work. We learn this is Emily.
I think the doorknob is like flashing fire and hurting him, you know?
Yeah.
Green fire. My only complaint about this scene is I kind of wish Emily looked a little bit more like Barbara.
Yeah.
Which is just pedantic stupidity. It doesn't matter. You know, in his delirium, he could have been latching on to any quality of Barbara's and getting that like confusion. But I just kind of wanted a visual. It was just what I expected after last season.
I had the same thought.
And what did you feel about the Shade saying, I'm incapable of feeling anything?
I don't think it's true. I think it's his own self-wallowing pity.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I feel like he feels stuff.
Yeah, I think so too. I love the back and forth where Pat's like, you know, Courtney had to face her own darkness in order to survive the Shadowlands. And the Shade just like, excuse me, are you talking to me about the shadows? And Pat's like, yeah, I am.
Yeah, that's like, all right, hold on. Why don't I tell you how to be a pushover?
Oh, poor Pat. But yes, but Pat kicks the door open and gets them out of there. The green envelopes them. And we cut over to Courtney in the office and she starts talking to the camera. A little tough talking there that you picked the wrong people to mess with.
Dude, they know all about the JSA.
Yeah.
He's like, dude, Rick can put aside that hourglass. Yolanda can take off the suit.
Beth can take off the goggles. You can put down the staff. But Todd and Jenny can't do that, and neither can I. And then enter Mr. Booms.
Yeah, they have a real face to skull moment here. And we get to hear about Mr. Bones' origin, which, you know, honestly, I don't know if it's the same as the comics. I can't remember. I feel like the experiments were done directly to him in the comics, whereas in this, I could be wrong. Please do at me if I'm wrong. Go on Twitter. Tell me, hey, dude, you're wrong. This is what happened in the comics, because I do not feel like looking it up.
Well, I was looking it up, and a lot of the origins of the people that we've already seen there in Helix, their mothers were experimented on, and that was their origin. So they could have been just tying it in with that. But I also didn't see what Mr. Bones' origin was.
So it could be the same, because in the comics, he's young like the rest of them. And he's not that old here when you consider that Nurse Love was already a nurse when he was born.
Yeah, and she's the one who rescued him after he killed his own mother with a cyanide touch.
Yeah, so if she was already in a position to do that, Lynn Ash is not that old. So he's got to be youngish.
Yeah.
He's not as old as Keith David.
Yeah.
Because I think Keith David is older than Lynn Ash, though still a very young and virile man.
And a great voice.
And a great actor. I met him once, you know. I won't get into it because I said I wouldn't distract us anymore.
So Mr. Bones is saying that he is just as cursed as Jenny and Todd is. What they're doing there is helping people, teaching them how to live in isolation, because that's the only way that you can live with stuff like this.
And obviously, Courtney is like, that's a great idea. people being isolated and all by themselves is exactly how you should handle that.
Yeah, nothing can go bad there. Over in the Shadowlands, doorways are not working well because Pat and the Shade drop from the ceiling into the Whitmore Dugan home.
I have something to say about this. Those poor set dressers who had to remove every piece of furniture, rugs, television, knickknacks on shelves, books, had to strip everything out of that house. And of course, put it all back together exactly as it was. That's a big job. And shout out to the set deck team for pulling all that out and putting it all back. Because when you have a permanent set like that, you typically dress it at the beginning of the season and then you undress it at the end of the season. And that is all. And having to like do that with one of your main sets in the middle of the season for one scene, that's rough.
When they had to do it at Richie's as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which that's isn't a good point. As big, I guess, but yeah.
I mean, at least most of the furniture there is permanent. It's like a fixed. So true. It's just like taking stuff off the walls.
Yeah.
But a house that you've dressed to look really lived in and occupied.
Yeah, that's a pain.
So shout out to set deck. That's all I had to say about that. Maybe we can discuss the actual scene.
Yeah, Shade is saying that he wasn't there when his sister died. He couldn't bear to face it. Had to cut himself off because he knew that he wouldn't be able to deal with that. And then Barb and Pat's dad appear. And before anything goes on there, we go back over with Courtney and Mr. Bones. And there's like shaking, like there's an earthquake going on. And it's because Jenny and Todd are still too close. And Courtney's like, no, Jenny is a light that he needs. She can save him. Life cannot be about isolation.
And, you know, I think it's worth pointing out at this point that like this whole speech from Courtney about the light in the dark and how people need each other and they can help each other in that way is so earned.
Yeah.
Through the course of the first two seasons, Courtney's experiences have led to this wisdom. It's not like just typey. She's going to say this smart stuff. Ha ha. It's literally built and you can see her thinking through the experiences we've witnessed her go through to draw these conclusions, which really helps when we see Dr. Bones like really contemplating this.
Yeah.
Mr. Bones, because we've established not a doctor.
Not a doctor. And he warned her, if you're wrong, we're all going to die.
Though, let's give him props here. He said, if you're wrong, we're all going to die. But he didn't say like, so let's not risk that. He's like, hey, you're a pretty smart 16-year-old girl. I think I'll maybe reconsider my entire philosophy on everything I've been doing.
I mean, Courtney's a little bit of an expert on the light. You know, she did defeat Eclipso using light. But she goes over to Jenny and has to convince her. Because Jenny's scared to be around Todd now after what just happened, and I don't blame her.
Scared of hurting Todd, not scared that she's going to get hurt.
Yes, and Courtney convinces her that you need to stand with him. Your powers react out of fear, basically, to remember what happened last season. All the fires that you started and everything. And, like, your powers react on your emotions, and so do Todd's. You have to balance each other out. And then we went over to the heartbreak in the Shadowlands at the Whitmore Dugan house. Pat's dad is saying, you think I'm a bad dad? Look at Mike. He does everything he can to get your attention, just like you always did for me. And then having the words come from Barbara, you don't see Mike at all, and he feels worthless.
But most importantly here, we're getting like the story of where Mike's mom has gone. We saw her in episode 201. At the diner in Nevada when Sylvester was coming through looking for Pat.
Uh-huh.
But we haven't known anything about her split from Pat and Mike, why Pat had Mike.
Yeah.
And it's a more heartbreaking story than I think any of us expected.
Yeah. Mike's mom abandoned him when he was 3 or 4. She was strung out, left him in the soup kitchen. And so Pat took Mike, drove away, and never discussed Mike's mom with her ever again.
Maggie Shaw. Yeah. I mean, who saw that being Mike's secret origin? Anybody?
Not me. And then the line that he feels as unwanted as Courtney does is just extra stab twist. Because it's like Pat is so concerned about how Courtney feels and her, you know, issues with her father that he doesn't see the issues between him and Mike.
But then this is where we also get that thing where Shadow Mike says, like, one day I'm going to hate you as much as you hate your dad. And Pat, like, he means it. He's like, but that's the thing. I don't hate him. I never did. Which I don't know how that's supposed to make Mike feel better, but it's good for us to hear.
Yeah. Well, I guess it doesn't matter making Mike feel better in this moment because he knows that's not really Mike.
Yeah.
So it's just, he needs to make himself feel better to keep the darkness out.
He's talking to the Shadowlands, basically. Like, yeah. Shadowlands, you don't know what you're talking about.
And the Shadowlands respond with green flames everywhere. Although that was responding probably more than Jenny.
So back in the real world, Todd goes full obsidian. Jenny goes in and is enveloped by Shadow.
Todd asks her to leave. And she says, I'm not going anywhere.
Because she needs to help him. He's trying to protect her. And when she disappears into that shadow, Nurse Love is like, oh, no, we should never have listened to you.
But just give it time, Nurse Love.
We get this whole flashback being pulled apart thing in reverse, kind of. They come back together.
Mm-hmm.
They center themselves and then return.
She shoots the darkness out of her ring.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes into Todd.
Or he sucks it out with his... Or it's drawn out, I guess, is a better way to say it, maybe. But yeah, the impurity is out of the ring. That's the important part.
And then we finally get their hug in the flashback where the kids were trying to fight to get to each other. We see they actually succeeded.
Yeah. And when the darkness goes into Todd, it seems to stabilize him.
Yeah.
The darkness from the ring.
And then over in the Shadowlands, Shade's telling Pat, you know, just leave me. I can't make it. And Pat gets tough with him. He's like, you're either going to die in here or you're going to die trying. Pick one. And the Shade is like, fine. And gets up and tries to escape. And then in the real world, the cyclone that's kind of surrounding them, the green and the shadows, that goes away. And we see Todd and Jenny hugging. And then Pat and Shade return.
Here's the only thing I wrote for this scene. The look on Nurse Love's face. She looks back at Courtney with like a, what in the, how did you, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But all like in a look without any of that nonsense that I just did.
How amazing would it be if she just said that?
What in the, how in the, what? But she's a good enough actress that she did that just with her face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, she looked straight up astonished.
Yeah.
Like, you have just shaken my entire concept of how any of this works.
Yeah, and after all that's wrapped up and they're walking through the hallways and leaving, Courtney's looking a little bit smug there. And Nurse Love say, you know, I guess you were right. And this is where we find out that Helix Institute isn't as bad as we thought it was. You know, Todd confirms that everyone is free to leave when they want to.
That deflates Courtney a little bit. She's very much like, well, what you're doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
Yeah. And then she's like, oh, but what about the cameras and all that spying on you or spying on us? Nurse Love is like, we're not doing that. We do our research. We know things, but we're not watching you through cameras.
And then when Nurse Love has a chat with Mr. Bones, it seems as if Courtney has completely changed the direction of Helix. And he thinks, maybe we should try our own super team. What with Critter and Penny Dreadful and Dow Jones down there? Did I miss someone? I feel like I missed someone. Oh,
thank you. Oh, the
shark dude.
Cuckoo Chow, yeah.
The charcuterie.
Yeah.
Carcharo.
Yes, that was it.
And so that's the first thing that seems to be setting something up.
Mm-hmm.
Leading into the next scene where Pat talks the Shade into mentoring Jenny and Todd so that Todd can control the shadows. Who better than the Shade to teach him? They have the same powers.
And Shade was starting off talking about how he felt bad for him because of how hard it was when he first started. That just reinforces the, dude, you are capable of feeling things right now. You are feeling something towards another human being here.
I mean, we see him feel disdain at least all the time.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
So they set off to go find Sandy Hawkins. who is Sandy, the golden boy in the golden age, Wesley Dodds, Sandman's sidekick. They say he's having nightmares about people in trouble, like his uncle did. Just not a thing that I remembered about Sandman.
And that's how Jenny learned where Todd is. Sandy had a dream about him. And so the deal she made was Sandy was going to help her find Todd. And then once she found Todd, she was going to go help Sandy with these nightmares.
So now tell me, between that, the three of them setting off together to go find a fourth, and Mr. Bones saying, let's start our own team, does this not scream spinoff to you?
It absolutely does.
And I don't mean like all the spinoffs we've been pitching all season, like Young All-Stars and The Zeke Show and all of this stuff. But this seems like a setup for a legitimate spinoff. This feels like Barry Allen heading back to Central City after leaving Starling City in Arrow season one or two.
Yeah, absolutely. This feels like a backdoor pilot.
So like we need this Infinity Inc. spinoff, right?
We do.
We absolutely do. Because as much as Sylvester Pemberton as Star Spangled Kid slash Skyman leading Infinity Inc. in the comics was cool, the Shade being the mentor figure for Infinity Inc. is such a better idea.
Oh, yeah.
I love this. And there are others out there. Ted Grant has a kid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they mentioned it in
season two. The flashback, yeah.
So, Ted Grant's got a kid. We've already got both Green Lantern's kids. Who knows who else could turn up? Maybe they'll bring in Silver Scarab, who was Hawkman's son in the comics?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just so many options. Probably not Adam Smasher, because, like, he's in the Black Adam movie.
Yeah.
But so many options. Let's do the Infinity Inc. spinoff series.
Hashtag Infinity Inc. spinoff.
Hashtag Stargirl verse, y'all. Because we don't want to stop Stargirl and start Infinity Inc. We want both happening.
It's true.
So we can cross-pollinate. Let's make this happen. Like, for real. This is the spinoff we need.
Yeah.
This show would be amazing. And, you know, Jenny hasn't played such a large role that it seems like she's needed on Stargirl. Not last season, not this season. It seems like maybe these are, and I'm saying this just as a fan of the show. I do not have any inside information or insight on this.
Okay.
This is not me like throwing out secrets, but it seems like Jenny's introduction in the first place and her story through these two seasons in just these small bursts has been not just for getting Jenny in there for the fans and not important enough that the show can't have not had her, but it seems like specifically a setup for a spinoff.
And I think the same thing.
So I think that would be fantastic, and I hope it happens, and I hope I can work on it. You know, like we can do Stargirl 6 months of the year and then Infinity Inc. 6 months of the year, and I'll just work all year round.
Yeah.
Going one to the other.
Stargirl verse in that. Yeah.
I don't know how we're going to start another podcast, but we'll do it.
We'll figure it out.
Anyway, I think that's all the stuff that I want to talk about outside of the actual events of the episode.
I thought it was so funny how the Shade just opens up the shadows and the three of them walk through. And my first thought was, wait, how are the others getting home? And then Courtney voiced that. Thought that was great.
Pat, that was fantastic. It's a really fun way to give Courtney and Pat some time alone together before they get home.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got to take a bus ride.
And Courtney is talking to him about how she helped and she didn't use the staff. And this was very motivating and encouraging. And she's not going to give up on her friend. She's not going to give up on the villains. She's not going to give up on herself. And Pat does not react at all.
He's too shaken from his experiences in the Shadowlands. But it should not distract us from the fact that Courtney has had her faith renewed.
Yes.
And that's going to inform the rest of the season for sure.
And she starts right at that moment where Pat's, you know, shaken and she's like, I remember when I came back from the Shadowlands, and it is very difficult to do that. And I still remember all those things. Offers to talk about it and gives him an avenue that he could do that.
Which is a reflection of earlier when they're removing the cameras from the basement. And he's like, you can talk to me about anything. You know that. Mm-hmm. So now she's offering the same thing to him because they have a reciprocal father-daughter relationship that is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. But he's not ready to talk about it yet. And then she has a realization that, you know, Pat, if Helix hasn't been the one spying on us, then who is? And we cut over to downtown Blue Valley, zoom in on the manhole cover down through the sewers. We see a hooded figure down there.
It's a utility access tunnel.
Oh, okay.
I was writing sewers at first and I was like, but I didn't see any water.
Okay.
And it did say Blue Valley Utility Company. So
did not know they were different. Okay.
Well, one is for sewage and one is for like underground electrical cables or something.
I thought they were all called sewers still.
I don't
that
know.
That makes sense. Okay.
It seems like a bad idea to have so many electronics in a sewer.
Probably.
And that might have just been an access to a part of the tunnels that we're unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
Because it might be some of those ISA tunnels that were put there by the founding fathers back in 18-whatever.
Right.
The other founding fathers, excuse me. That crazy insurrectionist group that founded Blue Valley back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to being founded by Cornelius Blue as it was in the comics. Yeah. Yeah, that's a real deep dive thing that I know is the name of the founder of Blue Valley from the comics.
All right.
And that's it. That's the episode. The episode is over. This guy is mad. He punches a TV. Or she.
I guess we'll find out.
I guess we will.
Yeah, what? Five episodes left?
Five episodes left.
All right.
You guys now get to enjoy this interview with the talented young actor playing Todd Rice, Tim Gabriel. After these messages, of course.
Stargirl After Show. Stargirl After Show.
All right, guys, I'm here with Tim Gabriel, who, I mean, we've been waiting so, so long for Todd Rice / Obsidian, and he's finally here. Tim, welcome to Stargirl After Show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Really, really excited about having you here.
Thank you.
You're the most anticipated character to come on since Jade, your character's twin sister.
Crazy.
So it's great. And her coming on only increased the clamor for Todd to come on.
Uh-huh.
So first, tell me about how Todd Rice came about for you.
Oh, gosh. As far as you mean, like, just like the audition process or?
Yeah. I want to hear what name you auditioned for, because I know it wasn't Todd Rice.
It was not Todd Rice. It was not Todd Rice. No, it was actually, it was Tom, I believe, Carter. Tom Carter. And it was funny. I actually got the audition. It was like right before Thanksgiving break. And I auditioned, got it, I believe it was through my manager. I'm sorry, through my agent. And I got the audition. It was like Friday, like November, I think it was like the 19th or something like that. And I had an audition here in LA, flew home, was with my family, got a call from my agent on that like following Monday. And they're like, hey, just so you know, you have a chemistry read for Stargirl for the Tom Carter role. And I was like, oh my God, because I have not the worst luck. It's like a blessing in disguise or a blessing and a curse. But every time that I go on vacation, whether it be like holidays or whatever it may be, I always get auditions. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to fly back. Like, anyway, long story short, it ended up just being a Zoom chemistry read. And so that Monday did the chemistry read with Issa, and Jeff was there as well. And literally just put the chemistry read up in my living room. And I was like, mom, dad, like brothers, you're not allowed to speak, do anything for the next 30 minutes while I do this. And I did the chemistry read. Issa was so lovely. Like, it was just very, very chill. I just felt really connected with her. And like right away, I was like, oh, like, I really like Issa. Like, her and I, we have a connection. This is great. Like, she feels like my sister. She even kind of like looks like we are very similar, just like she looks like someone like us is, which is kind of funny. And then, chemistry read went well. And then I think it was like 2 or 3 days later, found out that I booked it. And then literally was in Atlanta like that following Monday and was on set and filming like, I think on like Tuesday. So it was a very, very quick turnaround from audition to when I was actually on set.
Wow, that was speedy.
It was speedy. It was a lot. I was like, all right, let's go. We're doing this.
Yeah, I think I saw your name on the call sheet and was like, all right, I got to go find this guy on Instagram and let him know that he's going to be on this podcast.
Yeah, and you messaged me pretty quickly after I found out. Had we finished filming it? I can't quite remember. It was pretty quickly after.
Yeah, I remember I was like, don't worry, it hasn't leaked.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, all right, we're good.
Because I could imagine being in your shoes and getting that and going, did I do something wrong?
Right. Yep. But yeah, it was quick, and I was just excited to be in Atlanta and to get to filming.
Okay, so your boilerplate standard questions for anyone coming. This is your first superhero show, right?
This is my first ever superhero show, yes.
So boilerplate questions for someone coming onto their first superhero show. Right. Did you read comic books? Were you into superheroes at all before getting the role?
So to be completely honest with you, I read comic books a little bit growing up. I wasn't like a huge fan of it. I will say of all like the kind of superheroes, the kind of that I followed most, it was X-Men. Like I was obsessed with the X-Men growing up. And then obviously as I got older, got into like Marvel and things like that. But yeah, X-Men, they were my favorite, hands down. I always wanted to be, if I could pick one, I had always said I want to be Mystique.
Oh yeah, just change into anybody.
Yeah, why not? You're like, I want to be Beyonce today. I'm like, all right, let's go.
And you know, in the movie, she used her power to be a senator, and that's pretty smart. Or was it the president even? I mean, that's what you got to do.
Right, exactly.
Show up and, you know, change that one dude's vote. It's going to block everything, you know.
Exactly.
Get some stuff done. Right. And what about Stargirl? Were you familiar with the show at all before you got the audition?
I knew nothing about it. I honestly had not heard about it. So, you know, of course I did my research before and I was like, I wonder where like this Tom character fits in. Cause, originally the sides, like the dummy sides that we had, it was a scene between Danny and I, and it was this really, kind of like in-depth look into like their relationship and, you know, where they were at and where they were going. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, I wonder, you know, also where Danny plays into this. And then the second scene was one with Issa. And for me, I was just trying to piece everything together. I was like, I don't know. Cause you know, obviously they didn't say or specify anything of, you know, being Green Lantern's son or being Todd Rice. So I was like, I wonder what's going on here.
Yeah, I know. I mean, everybody pretty much had dummy sides.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going all the way back. Nobody knew who they were really auditioning for.
Oh, okay.
Some of the superheroes didn't even know they were auditioning for superheroes.
Really?
But everybody remembers their fake character name from the sides, which I always thought was funny.
Yep. Good old Tom Carter. And to be honest with you too, I mean, thinking about it now, I don't think I realized like in the initial audition that I was auditioning for a superhero. I was just like, oh, recurring guest spot. Cool. We'll see where this goes.
Yeah. Yep. And you said the first scene was with Todd and Danny. Tom and Danny.
Tom
so
and Dan.
That leads me into the next big question, which is, of course, tell me about your experience playing the first non-heterosexual presenting character on Stargirl and a superhero, no less.
Right. Yeah, it was really incredible. And to be honest, I didn't know that was the case until I talked to Jeff after I had booked the show. He actually called me and, you know, we kind of just chatted about, you know, the character, where we're at, like kind of where, you know, he was envisioning it going. And it was like when he told me that, I was taken aback. So I was like, wow, like the first openly kind of, you know, gay superhero, it was incredible to be there and to know that getting to kind of act on this platform that would be viewed by, you know, all these people. It was truly just incredible. And on set, when I met with Eddie, who plays Danny, he was like the sweetest guy. He was, you know, we were trying to like make each other comfortable. And I was like, you know, if you have any concerns or anything, like, let me know. Like, I want to make this as truthful as possible for the people who are viewing it. And it's really cool, you know, being a part of the LGBTQ community. I'm LGBTQ+ community myself. It was just really important to me to be able to show that, especially in like the opening scene, that just to show that it's okay to be you and that it's okay to, you know, people of all walks of life. I mean, coming into that first scene, or, you know, just introducing the character, you find out that, you know, that Todd is and Danny have been together this whole time. And they, in the dummy sides, you find out that, you know, they have been homeless and that they have, you know, been together this whole time. And this is, you know, their first introduction. But it was really cool. And as an actor myself, it was just, you know, really cool knowing that I'm representing such a big group of people on such a large platform. So it's really cool.
Todd and Danny's introduction is it's just a sweet romantic gesture. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing, you know, specific to any sexual orientation there at all. No. It could be two men, two women, a man and a woman. And it reads just as sweet. And I really, to me, I really enjoyed that it was just something that it wasn't like, oh, hey, look, we got some gays in here.
Yep. And that's really what I loved, the what made it into the final cut, because actually the when we were filming, we did a bunch of takes where Danny and I kissed. And I'm glad that they didn't incorporate that in there, just because there's no reason to be like, hey, you know, we are an outwardly gay couple. I just love that it was natural and it just flowed. And you know what I mean? Like you don't need to be told that. It's already alluding to the fact. And so I thought it was very tastefully done, like watching the final credit. Or I'm sorry, the final, clip.
So how long did you actually shoot across these two episodes? Because they were shot simultaneously, yes.
Simultaneously, yeah. So we shot for, I want to say it was like a week in December, and then I was supposed to go back in January, and that was kind of when COVID was at an all-time high, and I was supposed to have filmed for another like week and a half, but they ended up condensing my shoot days into, I think it ended up being 3 full days. And I will tell you, I had so much fun, but it was the most exhausting, like the final chunk of it, the last 3 days was the most exhausted I'd ever been, only because it was the scenes when Todd is in the Helix Institute. And so it was just 3 days of me being, you know, strapped to the gurney and having to pretend convulse for 8 hours for 3 days. And I was like, afterwards, I was like, I have to go home and get a massage and just breathe and decompress.
On the upside, you didn't have to go to the gym.
I didn't have to go to the gym because I sweat out probably a gallon of sweat, and my biceps.
You worked that core?
Yes. I my muscles hurt in spots that I didn't even know your muscles could hurt in.
Acting is not always as easy as people think.
No, it's not. And what was funny is in the opening scene, kind of when Todd, you know, you see him get his powers and he's convulsing on the floor. That was my first day of filming. And I remember after a couple takes, I was of course giving it 110%. It's like, man, you know, I need to maybe reel it in a little bit. I'm getting lightheaded. I feel like I'm gonna actually faint here. And I was like, and I know we have about 7 more takes of this to do. So, all right, some deep breaths. Let's power through this.
When you found out that you were actually playing a superpowered person from the comics, did you do any sort of research? Go back and read a bunch of comics?
Oh, I did like a deep dive into like Reddit, trying to figure out which Green Lantern is actually my dad. Did a deep dive into Jenny's character. Oh, I spent like a full day just going through everything, trying to piece everything together and understand, like, you know, where my character comes into play and how he's going to be incorporated into the show. And then I started watching Stargirl. And so I started from the beginning and I was like, all right, oh, okay. Like, this makes sense. I mean, of course, as much as I could do within the 2-3 days that I had before, you know, finding out I booked it to actually being there.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a lot of content. I hope you've gone back and watched the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so good.
I'm almost caught up on season 3, but I am in season 3.
good. Did you get to meet any of the other casts other than the ones that you worked with? Because you guys were split off into your whole own separate adventure in a different city.
We were. So who did I? Okay, so obviously, of course, I met Issa. I met Angelica. And then I got to work with Luke and Jonathan and I'm trying to think who else. Cameron I ran into in like the hair makeup trailer. Just it was literally like we were just like crossing paths and he was so sweet. I'm trying to think who else did I meet?
Breck, of course.
Oh, and of course, Breck. I worked with Breck. And yeah, I think that was it as far as cast is concerned. But can I tell you a funny story?
That please, like, that's why we're here.
This literally just happened on Tuesday. So for everyone who doesn't know me, during the day, I am a veterinary technician. And so on Tuesdays, I work at a rescue in Los Angeles. And we walked in and there was a girl in there and she had glasses on and a big hoodie. And I was like, God, she looks so familiar. Like, where do I know her from? And we were like examining her dog. And I was like, I am like 100% positive that this might be a vet, but I'm just like, I don't want to say anything because I don't know. And so she left and I was like, God, what is her name? And they're like, oh, we're not sure. Like, let's look it up. And it was Yvette. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, what are the odds that she's there on that Tuesday that I happen to be working there? And so I was like, we have to message her. Just like tell her that Obsidian says hi and that he just examined your dog. And so we messaged her and she was so sweet. She's like, oh my God, he should have said hi. Like, tell him congratulations. Like, we're so excited to see his episode. And it was just very sweet. But I was so upset that I didn't just say anything, but I was trying to be respectful.
You know what? I will tell you from experience that anytime you run into any one of the Stargirl cast members, say hi to them because they'll be happy for it.
Yeah, I know.
They're all just the loveliest people.
Can I also say of all the productions I've been on or all the sets I've been on, the Stargirl family, like everybody from the cast to the crew, hair, makeup, like crafty, everyone was so nice. And it was just, it was so refreshing to be on a set where everyone genuinely was just happy to be there. They wanted to, you know, everyone was asking me, you know, how are you? Excited to be here? It was, and it felt like, you know, granted, of course, I was only there for, you know, 2 weeks maybe, but everyone just made me feel so welcome and a part of the family. And so it was a really, really great experience to get to work with everyone.
That's great. I mean, that's how I've felt with them as well, just because everybody's so welcoming and lovely.
Yeah, it was literally the day after I found out that I got cast, Issa personally texted me and was just like, hey, brother, like so excited to meet you and to get to work with you. She's like, the minute you get into town, you know, you and I should go and get dinner and just get to know each other. And so it was so sweet. And then the first night after filming, myself, her and Angelica, we went out to dinner and just had such a good time. And they were so sweet. It was a really nice room.
Angelica is the best cast member to get dinner with.
She was the best. She was so much fun. I had met her right before we went to dinner and I was leaving my trailer and she like flagged my car down. She's like, Tim, like, wait for me. She's like, we just went to your trailer. We were so sad. We thought we missed you. And so her and I just had like a 5-minute conversation as I sat in the car, like getting ready to go home. And yeah, it was so sweet.
Absolutely sounds like her, but specifically the food part.
Oh, yeah.
Because we went to... Ange loves food.
Oh, she loves food. And we went to the best Mexican spot with the best margaritas. And we had a grand old time.
Oh, yeah. Grabbing dinner with Angelica is always such a joy. The last, not the last time, but recently, me and her and Yvette and Trey and a few other people all grabbed dinner. And she just like... wanted to try everyone's food to the point where like she was finishing everyone's meals and barely touched her own because you know you need to experience as much of the different food as possible,
of course, before you have your own.
Yeah, it's
that's not how you do it when you go out.
Her and I really, really bonded over our mutual love of all kinds of different food.
Yes
So yeah, if you're gonna grab dinner with someone on the Stargirl cast, make it her. If you've got a choice.
First-hand experience, I know. And I will definitely be doing that in the future.
So I want to ask you about, I did not realize that you were still have a day job actor.
I do. I am still in the still have a daytime job acting phase in my life. This role is actually the biggest role that I have booked. And so it's all very new and exciting for me. But yeah, I am still a veterinary technician right now. And it is great because I'm still able to you know, go to auditions. And if I book something, I'm able to still go and film and it's no problem. And yeah, the next step, of course, is to be full time. And, you know, that's kind of where we're headed. And I'm excited just for that journey to see where this leads.
It's also really great that, like, you have a day job that is already probably pretty fulfilling. Like, that's a great, worthy job.
Yeah, absolutely. And what better excuse to get to play with dogs and cats all day?
Yeah, most people, you know, are servers while they're getting their feet wet in the acting. And, you know, that's just like soul crushing. And then you have to go do an audition that is also potentially soul crushing.
Yep.
There's a lot of soul crushing going on. You get to play with puppies and then go to an audition where your soul isn't crushed. So you're probably going to land it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's actually funny because when I first moved to LA, I was between, and I had bartended for a little bit, but I was between working like an overnight hotel reception job or working in an animal hospital because my old, my friend who I went to school with, she had lived out here, I think a year or two before I moved out here. And she's also an actress. And when I moved out here, we ended up living together. She's like, yeah, you should really come work at the hospital. It's a bunch of actors and dancers. And we just all, you know, we make it work. Like we act during the day and we come to work at night. And so I ended up going that route and then kind of just like took a deep dive into the veterinary medicine field while also pursuing acting full time.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Have you worked in Atlanta before?
I had never worked in Atlanta before. That was I had just visited Atlanta for the first time in August of 2021.
Oh, that's not the month you want to visit Atlanta.
It was so hot. I mean, I had a great time, but yeah, the humidity was not for me. But yeah, so I visited for the first time in August and then I was back filming in December.
Nice. There's a lot of work here.
I know there have been a few times in my career where I'm like, do I make the move to Atlanta?
I mean, you know, we also have cats and dogs here.
You know, that is very true. That is very true.
You probably need to think about it.
Veterinary assistance, huh?
This sort of explains why my cyber stalking of you on Google didn't turn up a lot of biographical information. Not a lot of paparazzi following you around yet.
Notice
that yet, though.
Oh, yes. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know how I'd feel about that. The whole paparazzi thing just kind of freaks me out, but I guess it comes with the territory. So if it happens, it happens.
Of course, no matter how famous you get, there's always going to be like those guys that are drunk and come up to you and they're like, "You're that guy. Yeah, you were in that thing."
Right.
And then they say the wrong thing from a similar looking guy.
And then you just nod your head. You're like, yep, buddy.
Yep. That's
Thank you
me.
So much. Appreciate you.
I'm John Lennon. You're right. So, Stargirl.
Stargirl. Mm-hmm.
Biggest thing you've been on so far.
Biggest thing I have booked thus far.
I don't think it was on your IMDb yet when I looked. So you'll want to update that.
It is. It is on there now. Officially.
Okay, good.
I have looked. not episode 8 yet, but episode 7.
Oh, they just put the one on there.
Don't
want to spoil that you're
don't
in the second it. Part of the to be continued.
I mean, yep.
So here's the thing that I noticed and that my co-host and I, and I'm sorry you don't get to meet Sarah. She wasn't available for this interview.
Okay. Well, please tell Sarah I say hello.
So one thing I noticed is your episodes kind of feel like a backdoor pilot for maybe an Infinity Inc. spinoff.
Ooh. Yeah, you think so?
I mean, right now we still don't know if there's even going to be another season of Stargirl.
Well, don't put that into the universe. Let's say there will be.
We're hoping. Our fingers are crossed.
Have you heard anything? Any insight on that one?
You know, I literally have not. I pester Jeff every so often, and I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, "I'm still working on it, but we still don't know."
Gotcha. Okay.
But, man, if you three stepping into that shadow portal at the end of episode 8 and going off to find a fourth member doesn't feel like the setup for a potential spinoff.
It does.
I don't know what else does. So
it does.
You could potentially, maybe, find yourself tendering your resignation at the vet shop. That's not what they're called. But, you know, at the veterinary clinic to go and be a series regular on a
spin-off. Just tell you, if that happens, I will cry. And what's funny is the entire time that I was on set, everyone was chattering about that. Everyone was like, oh, you're getting on spinoff or, you know, if you get renewed, you guys are going to get to come back. And that, I mean, to hear that was amazing. And then literally the final, our final film day, Glenn, like we had just wrapped and Glenn goes, Director Glenn Winter, yes. Looks at Issa and I, and he goes, oh, you guys are for sure getting your own spinoff. And Issa and I were like, we hope so. Put it into the universe, please.
Well, I'm going to put that into the universe.
But to let you know, that like when he said that, Issa and I were just so giddy. We're like, oh my God, like, could you imagine? And the fact that Glenn told us that, we're like,
Look, you should listen to, we already recorded our episode for 308. Uh-huh. So you should listen to it because I do go on about it.
Do you really?
The idea of the Shade as like a reluctant mentor to these teenage superheroes is like the show I want to watch.
Right. Well, and also the other characters that they introduced, everyone was like, come on now, like, there's got to be something after this. And I was like, I hope so.
I mean, they introduced all of the Helix characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, all but one of the Helix characters in that little brief montage in the beginning.
Yep.
Setting up Sandy. And, of course, Wildcat and Dr. Midnight, as they exist on this show, are originally from Infinity Incorporated.
Right,
the Justice Society.
Right. Which I learned when I was doing my research. My deep dive.
Well, you know, a few episodes back, right before the season started, we actually interviewed one of the co-creators of Infinity Incorporated and your character, Jerry Ordway.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
He was the artist of all that stuff. And
that's awesome.
Very, very interesting tales he had to tell.
Oh, really?
One of the greatest comic book artists of all time, to my mind. It was very, very giddy to have him on this show.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I am intrigued about there being spinoff talk on set.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good to know.
And people, they would just bring it. They would just start talking about it. It's like, guys, do you really think so? And then it was funny is then everyone would start getting into have their own little theories. Well, yeah, like they did this and they did that and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. It's like, oh, I mean, that makes sense to me. I hope so.
And how great would that be to pick up what you think is a 2-episode role that turns into a whole series?
I mean,
of your own.
That would be an absolute dream come true. I wouldn't even have words. It would be amazing. And then to get to work with Issa every day, like, she's just so lovely. There were so many times on set where her and I, like when we had our extended, you know, breaks and things like that, like we would just be eating together in either of our trailers or just chatting. And like, she is such a genuinely just like nice and just like beautiful soul. And it was so wonderful. I couldn't have asked to have anyone else play my sister and to get to work with in such a capacity like this. Then Issa. And even to this day, like her and I, you know, we still chat and I actually messaged her the day of the premiere and was just like, hey sister, like it's premiere night. Can't wait to see our episode.
Nice.
Yeah.
Does she burst into spontaneous dance as often as I imagine?
She did a couple times on set. She did a couple times. Yeah. I also didn't realize how, like, of course, when I met her, I knew that, you know, she had told me she was a dancer. And then I did my Instagram stalking and I was like, oh, she is really good. Shoot. Cause you know, I've dabbled in dance. So that was kind of one of our initial like conversations. She was like, I'm a dancer. I'm like, oh, like I dance recreationally. And then I was like, oh, no, you're like a professional dancer. I just like step touch. I just do it for fun.
some crazy stuff does happen with you. I mean, you turn into a shadow creature on the show. Did you have to do any mocap or wire work at all?
Yes. So in the, I'm trying to think. I think the one and only time that we had to do any sort of like wire work was when I'm strapped to the gurney and when I kind of levitate into the air and become obsidian. And that was incredibly painful because I was holding the weight essentially like the way like the wires like picked me up, all the weight was kind of on my forearms and I couldn't move my arms. So basically like the metal, I don't even know what you call it. Like what do you call it on a gurney? The side,
the little rails.
Yeah. Thank you. The rails. My forearms were just pressed up against that and I couldn't move. And so every time they would lift me up, my forearms would just like press into the, into the rails. And that left some bruises. I will tell you that. But no, apart from that, I don't think there was any other crazy wire work or anything like that. But, yeah, that was interesting to have to do that.
Yeah. I've seen some of the raw footage where some of those guys are all rigged up for the wires and, you know, it hasn't been painted out yet. And it looks very uncomfortable.
If it's anything like what I dealt with, it was not comfortable at all. But it was, of course, so much fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's always that feeling like this is going to look super dope.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember Issa telling me that when she had her little flying scene, she's like, it was so cool. I got to fly. And then I was like, oh, hopefully I get to fly. And you're like, oh, you're just going to be strapped to a gurney and you're going to levitate. I was like, you know what? I'll take it.
Nice. Very nice.
Yep.
All right. Here's your flying scene. Hope you brought some Bengay.
Yeah, really. Do you need some Icy Hot? Because we've got some.
Icy Hot. That's a less old man version of what I said. I feel old just having said that brand name.
You know what? You're fine.
Tiger Balm, you know, for your arthritis.
Not the Tiger Balm.
So have you got any other projects on the horizon? Anything that you're able to talk about anyway?
Yes. I could probably share this. Yeah, I worked on a film a couple months ago. I won't say the title, but it is a horror film. And I will say I've never gotten to work in that genre before, and I had a blast. And it was also very physically demanding, but it was fun. But yeah, it's a horror film, and it revolves around a family, and you find out that one of the family members is a vampire, and yeah, so it's really cool. So I know that I just did ADR for that, gosh, probably like a month and a half ago. So I know they're wrapping things up, and then I believe it's going to go on the festival circuits. And yeah,
very nice.
Yeah,
in all your guesting on various shows, who's the actor that's like been the person that you were just like weak in the knees over working with, or like butterflies in the stomach?
Oh, easy. I worked, I had a very teeny tiny co-star on Why Women Kill. And I got to work with Lucy Liu, and I, like, growing up, Lucy Liu was like, she was my jam, like Kill Bill, like, come on. Just Charlie's Angels. But getting to meet her was a dream. And I think I only ended up working on set for like 2 or 3 days, but she was so kind. And I was just starstruck. Every time she like came into the room, I was like, I don't know what to say, but I want to talk to you and let you know that like you were my idol growing up. So Lucy Liu, hands down. And then, actually funny enough, I worked on the pilot episode of Euphoria. And unfortunately like got cut from most of the pilot, but getting to meet Zendaya was pretty awesome, because I was a fan of hers before the show. And that was really interesting and really cool. And then it was really fun to get to work with the other cast, because no one knew, of course, at the time what the show was going to become.
Right.
So just to hear everyone be like, oh, you know, we hope we get picked up. We hope this goes somewhere. And then to see it now, it's like, oh, how cool. Like, bummed that I got cut, but 'tis the business. What can you do?
Man. Yeah. It must be pretty rough being in like, even just a little bit in like a massive, huge cultural phenomenon of a show
and
get cut.
I tell you what, It was
because you didn't even get to have that joy of like, oh my god, I got booked on this huge thing, because it wasn't a huge thing yet.
No, it's funny. Like you in the pilot episode, you see me for like a couple seconds, and I get random messages from people now who just like start to watch, and they're like, "Were you in Euphoria?" And I was like, "Yes, for 2 seconds. I should have been in it more, but I hope you enjoyed it."
Oh, at least you showed up.
At least I showed up for 3 seconds.
Proof that you were there.
Yes. Thank you. Exactly.
And you know, you can still put that on your IMDb. It counts.
It does count. It does count.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Lucy Liu, hands down.
So let's go back further.
Okay.
What made you interested in becoming an actor in the first place?
Oh gosh. I grew up, going to see musicals. Like I grew up in Denver, and every time the national tours would come in, my grandma and I would take me to a show. It was always one of my Christmas presents. And so I actually fell in love with stage first, and then started acting in like middle school, and then started taking it more seriously in high school. And funny enough is when I graduated, so I went to college for it, for performing, and I originally had planned on moving to New York when I graduated, because I wanted to pursue theater. But my senior year in college, I took, we had a professional actor prep course with an actor who they flew out from California, Robert Blessy. And he taught this class, and I just kind of like fell in love with the whole film side of the acting world. And so last minute I was like, you know what? I love theater, but I think I'm going to go ahead and give film a try. And so ended up moving to LA and hit the ground running, and have been pursuing it ever since.
Very nice.
No.
Matt, you also like told the whole story. I have no follow-up questions. actually, here's one. What was your first film role?
My first network film role was...
I didn't say network. I said film role.
Oh, film role.
What's your first film TV, like your first like non-stage acting job?
I mean, of course I did a bunch of indie, you know, small indie things, but kind of the first bigger role that I booked was for Hulu's Casual. I don't know if you ever saw that one. I think it was on like 3 or 4 seasons.
That feels like one that my wife probably watches.
It was actually a really good show.
It sounds familiar, so I think maybe she watched it.
Yeah, it was a really cool show. And I think we filmed at like Beverly Hills Hotel. We filmed somewhere really fancy. And I just remember being on set and I was like, this is cool. I'm playing a receptionist. I love it. Hulu's Casual was the first big one that I booked.
Do you still get that feeling when you walk on a set where you're just like, oh my god, this is like a real thing that I'm doing?
Every time. I don't think I will ever get sick of that feeling. Like just getting to be on the soundstage, especially for Stargirl, because again, like I've been on many sets, but like this one in particular, it felt so cool to be able to go every day. Just be like, man, this is what I do for work. This is amazing.
Now, were you shooting out in Conyers mostly? Where the, because I know they use the Doom Patrol set for Helix.
Yeah. So the main, I don't know, studio that you guys filmed at. Yeah, we filmed there a bunch, and then the Helix. We also
okay.
We were at a bunch of different locations actually, but yeah, those were the two big ones.
So you were at the main offices. So
at the main office. Yep. Is that where we started? That's where we started. Yeah. Because the very first thing that I shot.
Oh, that's right. There was Erica M's, the restaurant.
Oh yeah. But that actually was not, I take that back from what I said previously, because that was not the first thing I shot. The first thing I shot was cut from the episode, but it was Todd when he's in the police car. And I remember walking on set and it was so cool. We got to do like the rain effects and everything, and we had a blast in that one. And then it was funny when we were filming the police car started, I'm not sure if you had heard about it, but the car started flooding. Like it started coming in through the sides and onto the two guys who were playing the police officers. And it was cracking me up because they weren't saying anything. And I was like, guys, like you, you're getting like dumped on, like, let's stop real quick and like dry you off and like get this fixed. But yeah, so that was the very first scene that I shot. Oh,
that's crazy. The reason I ask if you shot there was because, did you get to go down to the pit stop set and see Stripe?
No, I didn't get to do that.
Oh my God. Okay.
Bummer. I didn't
Every
know.
Single person you worked with failed you by not having you go down and look at that robot, because that robot is amazing.
Dang.
Like, yeah, no. When you watch the show, it looks big.
But in person?
In person, you're not prepared for it. And it's always like, oh my God.
Really?
It's so impressive. Next season.
I'm going to have a chat with Issa. I'm going to say the first thing we do when we reunite, you're going to take me there.
She got to have scenes there in that set. So she definitely saw it.
Man, she failed me on that one, but it's okay.
The reason I say this is whenever I was feeling like the work was super stressing me out, or, you know, it was a long day or just whatever, you know, there's deadlines and stuff. It's one of the best shows to work on, period. And I've worked on almost 40 shows now.
Wow. Okay.
But there's stress on every show just because of the deadlines and stuff. But when that was starting to happen, I would always just walk and go like hang out with Stripe for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Because that you get that feeling that like, oh my God, this is a real thing that I'm like, I'm on a movie set.
Right.
And you're right. It doesn't get old.
Yeah. I really don't think it'll ever get old for me. It's just like, I don't know, such a cool experience. And then also getting to just work on different sets and I don't know, get to play in these worlds that we make up. I don't know. It will always be fascinating to me.
And the sets feel so real. Like you're on one side and it's just like this shoddy stapled together wood. Right. And then you just walk around and it's like, this looks like I'm inside someone's house.
Yeah, this is a full scale family style home.
I mean, I've had it where I've walked onto a set and my brain will just like do this weird thing where it's like, you're in someone's house. You're not supposed to be here. Why are you just walking into someone's house just for a second? You know, and you're like, right.
Yeah. When we were at the Helix Institute, when, Nurse Love and I are walking down the hallway, like where we were, like kind of like our holding was, it was so creepy. I was like, I feel like I'm in a haunted house back here. Cause there were just so many different like hallways that led into random different rooms. I was like, this is kind of scary, but it's really cool.
Yeah. That's actually the set for Doom Patrol that they just loaned us for this show.
Oh, well, that's cool. I mean, it was an awesome set. I loved being there.
Are you doing any stage work still?
I haven't lately, but I mean, it is something that I want to get back into at some points. So I'm just kind of riding this wave right now. But I
for now, you're too big for it. But
oh my God, no, that is not what I meant at all. Not what I meant at all. I would love to get back on the stage. I just, you know, stage in LA is way different than it is in New York. So it's just kind of an entirely different beast out here. But I would love to get back on the stage. So.
Yeah, you don't really hear so much about stage in LA, like at all.
Unless, of course, it's, you know, in the touring at the Pantages or Amundsen or any of the other ones. But I would love to. And if I am anytime soon, I will be inviting you.
All right. I will be there. I do love a good stage show.
Yeah, do you?
I do. But I must say it's been lovely chatting with you.
Thank you. You as well.
And we will be watching your career with great interest, as someone in a very terrible movie said to a small child once.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on. And again, just thank you to the Stargirl family for welcoming me with open arms. And it's been a pleasure bringing Todd to life and reuniting with Jenny.
And it is. It's a family. As soon as you were cast, I think I said, welcome to the Stargirl family.
You did. You did. And Issa said the same thing. And Jeff said the same thing. Glenn said the same thing. It was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, we're all just a big, happy family. And hopefully the CW will let us keep being a big, happy family.
Let's hope. Come on, CW.
Well, Whether or not that happens, you still have an extended family here at Stargirl and a Stargirl after show.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I appreciate it more than you know.
Well, thanks for joining us and have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Stargirl after show.
Well, it was lovely speaking to Tim Gabriel. I'm very sorry you couldn't join us for that, Sarah.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry too.
But you know, I haven't joined you for all the awesome people that you have talked to on A Swift Review or What's New Nancy Drew.
No, but if you guys want to go listen to that, head on over to fandomlim.com. Check out What's New Nancy Drew, A Swift Review. And you can listen to Table Reads and Geese. Did I get that right?
No, not even a little bit. It's pronounced Geese.
I think that was pretty close.
It sounded more like a cat sneezing.
All right. All right.
So yeah, go listen to those things. Drop us a review on the Apple Podcast Store or whatever podcast app you listen to us on. If they do reviews, it's mostly just Apple. I don't know what other ones do. Mm-mm. But, you know, say nice things about us if you feel like saying nice things about us. And follow us on the things at StargirlPod on Twitter. That's all. That's all I have for you. Sarah, do you have anything else?
No, just go check out our merch store. Lots of merch. Awesome things. Go on over to StargirlAfterShow.com/shop and find all sorts of awesome things there.
Oh, man. I'm trying to find the time to add some really, really cool new products. I kind of want to tease them, but then I don't want to tease them and like not deliver.
But he's told me about them, guys. So you can trust me. They're pretty awesome.
If they work properly, it's down to my skill. So of course they're going to be awesome. That's it. Next week, we'll be back with Frenemies Chapter 9. Same star time, same star channel. Until then, have a super great day.
Stargirl After Show is a production of Fandom Limb Media.